Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is my friend who comes before the movie, Frank. How are you today?
Maria Menounos? Am I Maria Menounos with First Look?
You are Maria Menounos with First Look.
Yeah.
Did you watch Channel 1 when you were in high school?
Where I grew up, New York, Channel 1 is a news channel, so no.
Okay. Channel 1 was nationwide, I don't know if it's still going, thing where they would donate TVs and whatever else to schools. And it was just like a news network done by
for school, like in schools.
Yeah, And it was a news network. It was news network done by like people in their like early 20s and whatever else. But there's some when I was in school, there were some like now famous reporters like Maria Menounos.
Oh, no kidding.
There were other people on. One of them's on CNN now.
Wow!
And I can't remember who it is. They just did the news and they like kind of geared it towards the youth. And so, but I mean, when I was in high school, it was Katrina and Afghanistan and all. And that's how we got the news every day in homeroom.
Huh.
And so I've been watching Maria Menounos on TV since I was 14 years old.
That's so
because
that's
she
so
used
cool.
to be a reporter. Yeah. Huh. And now I watch her before the movies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
And now she runs a giant podcast network that she does.
Yeah.
I don't hate them.
No.
I don't
love them either.
No. Anyway, so what are you
drinking?
So
we're here to talk about Maria Menounos and her career. I remember. No. I am drinking a Harpoon Leviathan IPA. Which is a very satisfying IPA, not overpowering in its sort of, you know, hoppy bitterness, but
indeed,
just right. Just
wonderful. Right. You know, I'm glad that there was a great description because I'm drinking the same thing.
Ah, look at that. Yours is the same as mine.
It's almost as if they came from the same fridge.
What?
I know.
How can that be?
This is impossible. So Frank, this is an amazing weekend
last weekend, for
trailers. Justice League dropped. And Star Wars dropped.
A day apart. Sunday, Monday.
It's almost as if Disney didn't like WB having all the news.
I know. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because there were all these rumors that the Last Jedi trailer would drop on October 9th during Monday Night Football. And part of that fueled by Mark Hamill tweeting about it and then deleting the tweet. And there were all these rumors circling. And then it was confirmed that Justice League trailer was coming out Sunday. And very shortly thereafter, Disney comes out and was like, confirmed, Monday, we're putting out our trailer.
Yeah, like, I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, man, you're not letting them have the news cycle.
Nope, you stinkers. Did you already get your tickets to Star Wars?
I have not yet, actually. I'm actually not sure what state I'm going to be in when it comes out. I may be in Massachusetts or I may be in New York.
That explains it.
So I'm going to have to wing it or at least wait till I get a little bit closer.
You're going to have to X-wing it.
X-wing it.
Oy.
Hey. And we'll see what happens. I realize that means I've probably already lost my shot at a Thursday night screening,
definitely.
Most likely.
Because I bought mine roughly 40 minutes after they went on sale, and I barely got enough tickets to go.
So I'm either going to have to count on them adding more screenings on Thursday night, which they probably will.
Probably.
Or just wait till like a Friday morning screening.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds so good. Okay. So
you want to start with Justice League?
Let's start with Justice League since that movie's coming out first.
Yeah.
So we should start.
Seems fitting.
We should start with Justice League. We got the third trailer drop.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens what I think is a smart and bold move on Superman.
Yes.
Not really Superman. It opens on Clark.
Right.
And it opens on Dreamscape Clark, which is even smarter.
Yeah.
It feels almost like Wrath of Khan, like, he's in the movie. Oh, yeah, see, yeah, he's in this dream sequence.
It's like a reverse sort of, where it's like, no, see, Spock's not dead. It was just a...
It was just a Kobayashi Maru.
Right.
This feels like it was just Lois's dream.
Mm-hmm.
With the most beautiful sky Kansas has to offer, right. Which is actually Illinois, because that's where that farm
did
is.
Did you that in Illinois, really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Close enough, farmland area. I think it's smart. Know what struck me more than anything about that scene, though? How oddly happy I was to hear the Hans Zimmer Superman piano plunk.
You know what? Yeah, I was oddly happy to hear it too, because I don't really like it. But I was sort of this feels kind of comforting with this scene.
It was weirdly comforting. That's a great way of putting it, because I don't love it as a Superman theme. In its completion, as it nears the end of the number, it's kind of harsh.
Yes,
it's got a harsh sound, and I don't really care for it.
Yes.
I wonder if Danny Elfman will clean it up. Because he's a composer on this film.
So he is rumored to be including elements of the Williams theme and of his own Batman theme.
It's not a rumor. He said it.
So there you go.
He flat out did an interview, and he was like, this was great because I can do it, and they're letting me.
I'm shocked that he's using anything from the Williams theme.
He said he's flipping it on his head.
That's what I heard. It's maybe like a dark version or something. So, I don't know what that means.
Which people are thinking that maybe like, Darkseid has taken Superman, or Steppenwolf has taken Superman's body,
mm-hmm.
and done something with it to you know, flip that theme on its head.
Okay,
which is
kind of like what Luther did to Zod's body.
Yeah, that definitely. But I don't like that because one, it eliminates the idea of hopeful Superman coming back and saving the day.
Okay, yeah,
and also we don't associate that theme with
evil.
With evil, one, or with this Superman.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I'm surprised, first and foremost, that they would let him use an element of it. Because it's like out of universe.
It almost doesn't fit. And the same with the Batman.
I would argue it doesn't fit.
The same with the Batman theme. Both tremendous, tremendous themes.
Yes.
They're instantly associated with the character.
Yes.
It comes from almost the golden era of character
superhero
theme
movies
music
and
not even superhero movies, just character theme music,
right?
You know, that's, you know, Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Superman. And you know, like in Batman, this is, you know, late 70s early 80s when characters had
you know, great
music themes, and it doesn't really exist anymore.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. I mean, And especially having the work of a composer like Zimmer, who's not really nowadays known for melody necessarily. It's more about tone setting and mood setting.
He used to be known for melody.
Right. But
that's
not
great
his melodies recent
work.
Yeah.
Not his recent work, though.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the most you get now is dun dun.
Right.
Dun dun. But again, that was weirdly comforting to hear that.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he's going to mix and mash them. There is that weird little theory that this whole thing exists within the Burton universe, right?
I have. Yeah, there is a theory that it's like, this is the Michael Keaton Batman.
This is the Michael Keaton Batman.
Grown up, you know, older.
Although when I was a kid, Michael Keaton Batman always looked like he was 40 to begin with to me. True. So,
true. But that was the 90s, you know?
Right.
People dressed
like they were 40. That was the 90s, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you either dressed like you were 15 or 45.
That was
there was
it.
No in between. So I think, you know, honestly, when I hear it, I'm probably going to go, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But until then, I'm not sure how I totally feel. I like the Batman theme more than the Superman one.
Agreed.
Because at least this Batman, even from the trailers, you go, yeah, that's Batman.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you were a little murdery in BVS.
Yeah,
but you know what? You were a little murdery when you were Michael Keaton, too.
Right.
Like, actually, you were a lot
murdery.
You were very murdery when you were Michael Keaton.
The head count in that movie is actually pretty
high. It's pretty high.
Yeah.
So I guess that Batman still gets, you know, that the theme gets associated with that type of Batman. So I'm okay with.
I will say this Batman is closer to the Burton Batman than the Superman is close to the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Oh, 100%.
Right? So that's why it's weird. The thought of there being the Williams score, and even just like a motif, a hint of it, seems weird.
It seems odd.
We've gone a little off track here.
Maybe. We're only in like the first few seconds of the trailer.
I want to keep us on task.
So, although to your point against the Superman thing, which we'll get to, the that theme might signal the Superman you want.
Yeah, maybe.
And so maybe they're hoping that or at least Elfman is hoping that the theme now matches the hope that is instilled in you, not just as Superman in the movie, but as the character that you want to see. Yeah.
That he becomes sort of deserving of that theme.
That's right. Yeah.
I would love that.
Yeah. Which would make it even better.
That would make it beautiful and poetic and wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I would take back everything I said.
Right. Because we've heard that theme in other things. It was in Smallville and whatever. We've heard that theme associated with other types of Superman.
Yeah. Totally.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so getting back to the trailer, this was a little less. This trailer was a little less get the gang together, and more of the gang's already together.
Yeah.
It seemed like a lot of third act stuff. Nothing really new though. There wasn't tons of new footage in terms of in terms of Act Three.
No, you're right. There's a lot of the same footage. But
recolorized. Red filtered. A lot of rose red.
Rose colored glasses. Which everyone's assuming is a Joss Whedon choice.
I mean, it very well could be.
It could be. We don't know. We don't know.
We're not
but
sure.
But people are on the internet or anywhere have been assuming that.
I think, I really think WB is really smart not to tell us.
I think so too.
I don't really want
to
know.
I don't need to know.
No.
I don't need to know whose ideas
are. I need
are
you
which.
To make a good movie.
That's it.
I don't really care who, like, it might not have been either of their ideas. It could have been Jeff Johns. Could have been Gal Gadot going, like, what if this is red? You know,
like my costume.
Yeah.
Well, I think it just makes sense for that to be red.
Apocalypse. It's red.
It should feel like hell.
It's in the name, people.
Where before it was like that blue, gray, it's kind of dark. I can't really see anything in front of my face. Kind of Zack Snyder looking thing.
Yep.
Of like, just. Gray.
It's and gray
bland.
And bleak. Even the third act of Wonder Woman has that problem where it's like,
yeah, kinda.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Who?
As much as I love that movie, it does have the like third act
problems.
I'm fighting the smoke monster.
Yeah.
And it's, why do we find third act problems so funny? Who says that we think that's funny?
I don't know. Nobody. It's just us.
It's just us. We're just like, third act problems.
It's because we went to a comedy show and we found it funny then and we haven't let it go in 2 years.
Was that what it was? Third
act
problems?
Yeah, it was when we saw Kumail Nanjiani and he was talking about his film collection.
Okay.
Yeah.
All his VHSs. All his
VHSs.
200 movies.
200 movies.
Okay. That's what it was.
Yeah. But the red is selling with people, it really seems. People are going, one, it looks cool. It doesn't really look like the third act to any DCEU film. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really even look like the third act to any Marvel film, which I think is the important part. Mm-hmm. Because if they like say fought everybody during the day, people would be like Avengers,
right?
Or Age of Ultron also fought people during the day.
Right.
This is a different thing. It feels the red for whatever reason. Feels more threatening.
It does feel more threatening.
You know,
I agree. It feels more threatening. It stands out from the just instead of just the gray, the dark.
Yeah,
I really felt like we saw a big chunk of the third act of this movie, I think, or at least a chunk of it.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't really know all the things that are going to happen necessarily to get them to this point, but at the point that we're seeing it, the band is together, as you said.
Yep.
And they're working as a team. And I got really excited seeing that,
seeing
them work together as a fluid team. It did give me an Avengers vibe, only in that, like, in that big fight in the third act of Avengers. They are a well-oiled machine. They're, like, Hulk is throwing people and, like, they're, like, using their talent, their powers to, you know, build up on each other. And we had that of, like, Cyborg catching Aquaman and then relaunching him and that kind of stuff of, like, really tight teamwork.
Agreed.
Was really exciting. It felt like watching, like, it felt like something that, like, me and my friends would have done in the sandbox with our action figures.
Agreed.
You know, it felt like, and then Batman comes over here, and then Cyborg, like, it was really exciting.
I don't think it's, they're not super well-oiled yet. Which I like, because, you know, like, say, like, when Cyborg catches Aquaman, he is, like, he's surprised by it.
Yeah.
You know, right?
It's not planned.
It's not a planned catch. Right. But, you know, as the team grows, you get more.
Yeah.
You get like it's kind of like you said Avengers, like they're kind of working together and it's good. But then when you watch like the opening scene of Age of Ultron, they're so cohesive
right.
in their movements.
Right. It's not Age of Ultron smooth yet.
No, and it shouldn't be.
No,
and
exactly.
You know, but exactly. But all these people, I mean, Wonder Woman's been Wonder Woman for over 100 years at this point. Right. Batman's been doing it for over 20.
Mm-hmm.
Aquaman arguably has probably been also doing something for a while.
Years, yeah.
So Flash and Cyborg are the
rookies.
The rookies. But if you know anything about Vic Stone, Cyborg, like, he was the captain. He was the quarterback.
Right.
You know, he knows how to work with a team.
Sure.
So it's the Flash that is kind of the odd man out, I guess, in that respect. But because he's so fast, he can literally catch up to the moment,
mm-hmm.
whereas everybody else is doing it in real time.
Right.
So it could seem like he's cohesively working with them.
Right.
Because
right.
he has the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He has the time.
He has the time.
Yeah.
We get some Wonder Womaning
yes.
about.
She, once again, she is just so, like, anytime she's on screen, she is stealing the scene. Like, she is so captivating.
She does a lot of wry smiles.
A lot of wry smiles,
oh, hey, this is, I'm just here, guys.
Yeah.
I'm effortlessly awesome. That's exactly, yeah. That is exactly
she's
right.
Effortlessly awesome. Yeah, so she, you know, but honestly, we didn't get enough of her. In the trailer.
I think she was heavy in the last trailer.
Yeah.
And so they didn't want to oversell
yeah.
her. You know, cuz she could come it could come off that way, like, look, you loved Wonder Woman, remember?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Which would be in one sense smart for them to, you know, put her up front and center.
If you look at their marketing material now, it's not Batman in the front
anymore.
It's Wonder Woman
yeah.
in the front.
Yeah.
Which I've actually always liked, because as much as I like Batman, he really shouldn't be the team leader.
He's not the heart of the team.
No, he's not. He's the guy that's like, call me when there's a problem.
Right. And they, I think, made the decision early on that he would be the leader of the team and the person that brings everyone together.
Yes.
Because
of his promise to Superman.
Yes. But I would say, maybe being a little cynical and maybe the out of story reason for it is because
Batman's stupid
popular. Like, Batman is the most popular superhero in the world, probably.
Definitely.
So it just made sense. Like, oh, well, let's have him be the unifier.
Right.
But really, in-universe, I think they could have made a stronger case for her being the one that, like,
goes to
Bruce and says, we need to start a team.
Well, I think that they're really doing it together. Like,
yeah,
they are. From previous trailers, you get the sense that it's not, like, his idea, and she's like, okay,
they're
I guess.
Two founding members, and they're looking for partners, right?
Yes, exactly.
But I feel like... if they were rewriting this story now, knowing how popular the Wonder Woman film was,
mm-hmm.
I think they would have been better served to have her be like the instigator, the single.
It's true. Although
that's my opinion. Doesn't invalidate anything.
I don't think you're wrong, but I also don't think you should discredit. Like, we shouldn't say, like, Batman shouldn't be a founding member just because he's super popular, you know? Or
no. But I think that she should be because of the role that she plays in this universe of
yeah.
being like the heart of.
I think it in universe, his reasoning makes more sense. She literally shows up to be like, hey, I'll help.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, you know, like being on this journey of discovery that Batman is on in BBS.
Yes.
And so it would make more sense for them to join up at that point.
Yeah.
But I think it would be odd if Batman was like, well, what an adventure that was, and goes back to the cave. And then she's like,
yes.
okay,
yes.
how about we make a team? Like
yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah.
you know, it's his dream about the end of the world. He mentions in the trailer, I had a dream about the end of the world, which we know is that, like, you know,
the nightfall.
The post-apocalyptic desert wasteland
thing.
Yeah, people
have a name for that.
Nightmare.
Not nightfall.
Yeah. Nightfall is
a different story.
Backbreaking.
Yep.
We see some Amazons fighting.
Yes.
We see some Amazons fighting Apocalypse,
mm-hmm.
some parademons and all that. We also get that shot of that guy, assumingly an Atlantean, because there's that, you know, it's supposed to be, or maybe just a human, because it's supposed to be basically like King Arthur, the Atlanteans, and the Amazons
right.
all coming together
right.
to, maybe not King Arthur, but the humans at least, to come together to fight Apocalypse the first time. And so that's Apocalypse with a K, not with a C, not the blue guy, but the new gods, the planet. But anyway, we see him turn gray with some sharpening teeth. What do you think's happening there? What are your theories?
I wasn't sure. I thought that was a reference to something that went over my head, to be honest, because he like decays, you know, and turns from like looking humanoid to looking like.
I kind of assumed he was coming a parademon.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was even possible.
Comic continuity is that parademons are not from Apocalypse; they're genetically modified and created.
So you think this is the creation of parademons?
You go and make more parademons. This is how you have an endless army. Every time you conquer, it's classic armying, right? You know, right. When you go someplace, you take their army; they now fight for you.
They fight for you now,
right? So this is you know. So I think we're seeing that kind of creation. Which is pretty cool. I'm glad that this trailer, when I first watched it, I was kind of like, didn't really show me a lot. You know, didn't show me tons of new things, nothing that I didn't already know. But BVS was so, it was hit so hard with backlash that you showed too much. What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I like that. Like, I still don't really... I know at one point they're going to fight Steppenwolf and parademons in what is seemingly an abandoned part of some city.
Yeah.
Within the trailer universe, I don't really know anything else.
We don't really know, no.
Justice League is gathering to go do this thing.
We know a fair bit about one of the major plots of the film. Mm-hmm. But we don't know a lot about the subplots. We don't know a lot about... where a lot of characters fit in. There are a lot of characters who we see for just like we see Gordon for like a shot. Was Alfred even in this version of the trailer?
Yes, he was.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
But like.
He speaks this time.
Oh, right. Yeah. He had the line about, yeah. The one that we all assume is about Superman.
Assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have Gordon and him for like a second, but you know, their stories, while they're minor characters, will be fleshed out more. There's a lot still to be seen, which is exciting.
It's very exciting. What do you think of that shot of Wonder Woman on the Statue of Justice?
It's not subtle, but it's beautiful.
It's not subtle. that is correct. For whatever reason, it feels weird to me. Maybe it's the angle of the shot, but I like.
Well, why did she climb a building to go on top of the statue that's on the top?
Why do any of them do that? You know, why do any of them? Unless, of course, it's going for vantage point. You know?
Which is kind of what I think is like it's the beginning of the battle or something, and she's like,
"Well, she's in London. You can tell because of the egg behind." Yes. So
I heard. Actually, I think our friends over at the Suicide Squad cast speculated that's the statue on the top of the Old Bailey from the.
Oh yeah, could be
the first building that gets blown up.
Not sure, to be honest.
I'm not sure either.
I was just there too. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't this trailer come out in past April?
Damn,
Frank.
I don't know.
Tell me. What do you think of this one man is strongest alone, and Bruce being like, that is the opposite of what is true. Do you think Aquaman is such a bro that's not Aquaman. He's definitely just Jason Momoa pretending to be Aquaman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that feels okay with this.
I don't really have strong feelings on the matter, to be perfectly honest. Because Aquaman's not a character that I know super well.
You didn't like his look, though. I remember when they released the look of the character and you were like, that's not my Aquaman.
Well, the first poster, the one that just Unite the Seven, it was just him. There was something about the way it was lit and the you know stylistic choices they made that made him look too pretty.
Okay.
Like, he had like his hair, the way it was falling and everything. I was just sort of like, I don't know if I like that look.
You thought he was too pretty.
Yeah.
I would not have used that word, but no, that's
fine. I wouldn't
fine.
Normally, but like the way they styled his hair, the way his eyes were colored, or at least the way they looked in that first poster. It's just, it was an unusual look. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Hmm.
I've gotten used to it. I've gotten used to it, and he's clearly not being like what I thought he was going to be. Like, the impression I got from the poster was wrong.
Okay.
So it's fine. I've gotten over that.
Okay. That's interesting. He... reminds me, Jason Momoa in general. Actually, I have a friend that's very much like him. Hmm. Like, they kind of look alike. They talk alike.
I think you showed me a picture of this person.
Yeah, isn't it weird how much they look alike? Yeah, so, I mean, good for both of them. but, like, when Cyborg catches him, he's like, my man. I was like, oh my God, you're just Rob. Which is great because I love Rob. He's the best. He's, like, one of the best people I know. And that's so, amazing. But it's going to be, like, weird watching him being like, you're just Rob.
That's amazing.
Yeah. You've got fun sayings and tattoos and muscles and all that stuff.
All the things Rob has.
I do like that image of the flying fox with the green light in the back of it, kind of silencing people, being like, you know, that green light from the last trailer? That was just the green light.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Done.
All of you.
Chill, guys.
Maybe Green Lantern's in it. Maybe he's not. Why don't you just be happy that the Justice League is in it?
Yeah, right. Do you think that they are going to pull out a surprise like that and have there be like surprise, like entire characters who we don't know about?
I'm sure.
You think so?
I'm sure there's at least one character we do not know about.
Really? Mm. At this point, you still think so?
I'm not saying even if that's, I don't even, that might not necessarily be a hero or a villain, but I think that there might be a character we don't know about.
Hmm. But surely if that's true, it's got to be a very small, like almost a cameo, right?
Like, oh yeah. I'm not saying there's like a 20 minutes to the end, they'll go, oh, it's also me. It's Green Lantern.
Okay.
I'm here.
Yeah. That's
like,
what I mean.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Like it's possible. Maybe it's a Barbara Gordon reference or something like that. I can see, but like, but I can't see there being like Hal Jordan joins the team or something.
Right.
Like that,
no. Could be minor. My real question in all of this is, why haven't we really not seen Steppenwolf yet?
I think they want to hold back the...
Because he's big and gray and looks like the rest of them?
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
I think they might be afraid that people think he's Doomsday.
He doesn't look at all like Doomsday, though. But he looks more like Ares, honestly.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
You know, horn. Big, tall, gray, horned helmet.
Yeah.
People might get confused. But I don't know. I think it would be to Joss Whedon's or to the film's pro list to maybe spice up his costume a bit. I mean, it's all CG. It was is Karen Hines in a green suit. You could do whatever you want with it. It would be to their benefit to not make him giant and gray.
I agree. I think that's overdone and that we should be moving on from that look because that's not really scary anymore.
Why can't the villain have some color? Like, what's the problem with that?
I know. Well, especially when the rest of the world is all gray and everything, then the villain doesn't stand out.
Yeah.
It's one thing
when
it's red. But you know what I mean? Like when you're reading the colorful pages of Action Comics in 1992 and Doomsday came along and he was giant and gray, that stood out because everything was colorful and here's this gray thing devoid of all color. It's ugly. It's whatever.
Right. And I'm not saying Doomsday should have been purple or anything.
No, but,
right.
But not the Hulk, but.
But Zod wore a big black suit.
Yeah.
Doomsday was gray. Yeah. Ares was
a smoke monster.
He wasn't a smoke monster. He was a real person.
Yeah, but he manifested as a giant smoke monster.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Not at all was he a smoke monster.
Dude, yes, he was.
No,
he
wasn't.
At the end, when they were actually battling?
He was wearing a metal armored suit.
Yeah, but he was like a big like billowing thing, like
he
a cloud
literally
thing.
Was not. I just watched it again.
Then my memory is really, really skewed because I remember him being like...
It's really skewed. There's smoke because there's fire.
Yeah.
But he himself is not smoky.
Okay.
At all. All
right. I'll know when I'm wrong. That's what I remember him as.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd recommend playing Luminosity when you get a chance.
Okay.
It's that little mind game on the thing that pops up. Oh, yeah. Like, play for 30 seconds and you'll never lose your
mind.
Is
that one of those things for your O-phone? With that you use with the fruit company that makes the phones?
Yes, the phone company.
I don't remember the names of anything.
It's called the phone company.
The phone
There's
company.
Only one.
There's only one. Okay.
The
cool.
phone company.
Okay.
Very good. Shall we move on to Star Wars?
I think we should.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So this actually, before we move on.
Yes.
The last scene with Flash being like, oh, that's the bat signal.
Really funny.
That's our friend Dan, right?
That is our friend Dan.
Right, and it's amazing.
Yes.
But I do like the mom and dad look that Wonder Woman and Batman go.
Oh boy,
like,
what are we gonna do with this boy?
Like, just shut up.
What are we gonna do with
shut
this
up,
kid?
Shut up, kid. Shut up. it's all good. It's all in good fun. So this Star Wars trailer, much anticipated. We open up with some Kylo Renning.
he's Renning and he's Kyloing and he's doing all the things.
He's in that facility that we see a bunch of times in this trailer.
Yes, yes.
Like a bunch.
A bunch, a whole bunch. And so I'm trying to piece together, you know, sort of where things are taking place and like chronology of when some of these lines happen in relation to another.
I think I got it.
You got it? Okay.
Yeah,
I
got a whole thing. So
I don't really have a theory.
I have a whole thing.
All right,
so,
let's hear it. I want to hear.
So he's in this facility, right? Okay. Kyle's in this facility, mm-hmm. which we see coming back and back. And it looks like Finn infiltrates that facility.
Yes. Okay.
And it goes kablooey. So arguably maybe his mission is a good one.
Okay.
And by the end, because he fights Phasma, which looks awesome.
Yes.
So I think when you see the band, what is essentially the Band-Aid on his face, that's the beginning of the film.
The Band-Aid on,
because we know this movie picks up immediately where Force Awakens left off.
So he got the scar from his fight with Rey.
Right. So it would make sense that he's got a little healing strip on his face.
Sure.
And so that scene where it looks like he's about to shoot Leia, mm-hmm. beginning of the film, which means Leia is not going to die by Kylo Ren's hands just yet, if at all.
Got it. So he contemplates killing his mother and
because he was told by Snoke, you hear it in the trailer and it's in Force Awakens, that killing your father, moving on from the past, will allow you to go for the dark side. We know that once he kills Han, spoilers, once he kills Han, he does not feel any different.
Yeah.
In fact, he feels terrible.
Yeah.
And then gets shot.
Yeah.
You know, so he feels even worse, I guess.
Yeah.
Now he's in pain in his tum-tum. And so I think so he like does this thing where like, now I've got to go get Leia because that's the thing. So killing dad didn't do it. I've got to kill both of them. And he just can't bring himself to do it. And we've talked about this on this podcast before that he just wants to be Grandpa Vader so bad.
I will finish what you started.
But he hasn't, missing the point that Vader redeemed himself at the end.
Yes.
And so he literally can't finish what he thinks Vader started because that's not what Vader did.
Yeah.
And so he can't be evil as much as he wants to be.
Yeah.
There's actually literally too much good in him.
Yes. Yes.
Like Luke could potentially go dark. Like, right. You know, and like there's a lot of darkness in Luke as well as goodness.
Sure.
Kylo Ren's got too much good in him to actually be terror. Like, I mean, that being said, he kills all those people at the Jedi Temple, so he's not great.
He's bad, but they're ultimately good will win out,
right? So then we hear this Snoke thing, you know, when I found you, potential power, blah blah blah. He's not talking to Kylo.
He's talking to Rey. Agreed.
He's because when I found you, because Rey was left on that planet. She was left on Jakku and didn't know where her family, why they left her, her family. They left her because Snoke was trying to find her. And she was safe on that planet.
I'm with you on that. For sure, it's clear that he's talking to her.
Yeah. Also, there's the scene of Kylo reaching down to pick up his new lightsaber.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say that is a new lightsaber, right?
His new lightsaber. And behind him, there are the Red Guards, like the new Imperial Guards.
Yep.
I think he goes to pick up the lightsaber because he's going to fight his way out of there.
He's going to fight them.
So
you think that we're going to see him like struggle with the light side?
I think we're going to see him rebel.
So then let me ask, can I skip ahead to the end a little bit?
Yeah, of course. We're not going to do this trailer in order.
No. So at the end, when the shocking moment that I think everyone sort of, you know,
they're gonna
jaws
hands.
Hit the floor.
Yeah,
where it's like, is she turning bad?
No.
Is it more that they're meeting in the middle, or he's turning good and willing to help her?
I think he's turning good and he's willing to help her because what we see in the trailer, Luke is very unwilling to help her.
So he makes that reference to like the last time I saw this much power, I wasn't afraid of it, but this time I am.
Right.
He's talking about Kylo Ren and how he wasn't afraid enough of him.
Right.
And now I see you have the same amount of power. I'm staying away from you, kid. I am not going to train you. I can't trust you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
With that amount of, like, the absolute power corrupts absolutely. You will be corrupted. I cannot train you.
And we've heard from people involved in the film before, you know, Rian Johnson, whatever, he said that when asked, like, who does Rey like more, Luke or Han? She likes Han more because Han was open to her and who she is. And Luke shuts her down, not interested.
Yeah. And it seems like maybe he starts to train her because, like, we do see her doing those exercises on Skellig. I forget the name of the planet, but Skellig Michael, Ireland.
Ireland.
But we don't, but I get the feeling that they get through some amount of exercises, and then she showcases some amount of power that scares him, and he cuts.
He cuts the cord. Says, yeah,
no more, that's it.
Yep. It's kind of like Yoda and Luke were like, "No, too old are you to begin the training? You know, I'm not interested." But instead of continuing, because there's that other stuff where like she goes to the tree in the mist and in the water, and that feels kind of like her Dagobah cave thing. And he's like, "This is not going to end the way that you want it to."
Right.
I think he's just totally unwilling to help, and you can't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm kind of on Luke's. Not necessarily on his side, because we know Rey's a good person.
But if I were him, I would, having the same experiences that he had,
I would definitely.
I'm not going to make the same mistake twice.
Nope, I'm not going to. So going to that end scene, I also look at Rey's costume.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing. So like when she's on Skellig Michael, she's in her Jakku outfit.
Yes.
But then when she's being taken or hurt by Snoke, she's in her new gray ensemblage. But when Kylo reaches out her hands to her, she's in her Jakku ensemblage. So I think that happens earlier in the film than the Snoke stuff.
So one thing that
maybe Luke cuts the cord and Kylo picks it up. And that's where it continues forward, and that's where she puts on the gray, because the gray kind of delineates now that she's walking the line between good and bad. She was in the whiteness, and now she's not in black, but she is in gray.
She's
Gray Ray.
That is exactly the place that I was headed with that. Like, Star Wars is not subtle about things like color and like they're, you know, like Darth Vader is in all black and has a red lightsaber. Like, these are things that are more sinister, right? But in Return of the Jedi, Luke wears black for most of the movie. And then towards the end, when he decides that he's not going to kill Darth Vader,
his little piece of his shirt
opens up and there's white underneath, showing that he was good inside all along. This kind of symbolism exists throughout. So you're very wise. I didn't really think about this the two times that I watched it before now, but you're very wise to be looking at the colors that people are wearing to indicate where they are in their sort of journey.
Sure. And it's not all of them, you know, like, because, you know, Finn's wearing
appropriate clothes. The jacket.
Yeah, right, for his mission or whatever.
But for Rey, who, like, this is important. Her, you know, place on the spectrum between dark and light is in question.
That's right.
It makes sense to be watching.
That's right.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, because even if you, like, going back to the original trilogy, you follow Luke's clothes. You know, he goes from all white to dark tan, you know, whatever, to the black, and then to the little flip with the white.
Yep.
So you're like, you follow this progression of color. And I like that Star Wars gives you that, because it allows you to, you know, if they're wearing whatever, you can't pick it apart. It's not as fun.
Yeah. It's not as fun. There's something, you know, kind of literary about it being the way it is. Finn and his mission. I like the part of your theory where you talk about that maybe his mission is to, like, you know, blow up this facility or whatever. And then he ends up fighting Phasma. I wonder if it's almost kind of an Obi-Wan type of situation where it's like, okay, your job is to go, not necessarily saying Finn dies here, I don't think that happens, but saying just the idea of you have to go turn off the tractor beam and then you end up fighting Vader in the end. Like, I wonder if there's a similar kind of path for him, a parallel there, where, like, your mission is to blow up this facility, and on the way you end up meeting your old master.
Definitely. Well, that facility, we see a couple, like, of the same planets over, you know, a couple of times, and I really like, I'm glad Phasma's got something to do this time. That was a big flaw of Force Awakens, that she was a cool-looking character with nothing to do.
Kind of like Boba Fett.
Yeah, kind of like Boba Fett, but even where Boba Fett, like, Boba Fett moves the plot along in some way, you know, and he certainly didn't in Jedi, but
in Empire, at least
here, it looks like she might be at least, like, give us something cool to look at, you don't get, like, the mystery of Phasma or whatever, which I don't necessarily want or need.
Yeah, I don't know.
But villains are generally not explored in the Star Wars universe the same way, you know, like, if you want Tarkin's back history, you read the book.
Read the novel. But it's a story about good and bad, told from the point of view of the good.
That's right. Exactly. And the gray.
Yeah. And the gray. Yeah.
And
yeah.
the gray. We also look like we're getting a flashback sequence in a Star Wars film, which we've never had before.
Not really. I guess we had Rey's sort of like force flashback thing, sure, with the lightsaber, mm-hmm, but yeah.
But like a real whole chunk of a scene.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, we've had flash forwards in, say, Rogue One. You know, it starts with, mm-hmm, with Jen Erso as a kid,
mm-hmm,
and then we go to the present.
Sure.
But which is the past in the Star Wars.
It's all a long time.
It's all in this is a different galaxy.
Yeah, far, far away.
Yep. So it looks like we're, you know, it looks like I'm wondering if Kylo actually goes and tries to kill Luke and thinks he's dead and isn't. So one of the reasons Luke is hiding is not dissimilar to like Yoda hiding on Dagobah. The Emperor thinks that he's dead, or at least has gone into exile so much. You know, he's following or Obi-Wan or whatever that they are.
That's a good thought too. That's very possible. Yeah, that it's everyone assumes he's dead. I mean, honestly, yes, I'm going to agree with you right here and right now, because even Rey thought he was just a myth.
Right.
So everyone, he's so dead that people aren't even sure he ever existed.
Right. Exactly. I mean, we have figures like that in our own, you know, military histories and whatever else. There, sure, are people that you hear about in, like, there's a, I can't remember his name for the life of me, but there was a guy.
Jacques Cousteau.
No, we know who that is. There was a guy in World War II. He fought for the Brits. And he used to carry a bow and arrow into. He was on the beach at Dunkirk.
In World War II?
He used to carry a bow and arrow. And he's like super famous war hero, like crazy, did a bunch of cool stuff. I don't remember his name. You know what I mean? Like, okay, he might as well not be real. It's not dissimilar to that, except that the galaxy is so much bigger than just our world that it's not unlikely that somebody like Luke could disappear. You know, galaxy's a big but also a small place, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we do know that it's a big galaxy, but it's also a small galaxy, yeah, because we keep running into the same family.
Right. Well, I mean, Star Wars proper is really about the Skywalkers.
Yeah.
I
think you are referring to John Mad Jack Churchill.
That's it. Yep, that's him.
Mad Jack Churchill. Wow. Yeah, this is a very interesting story. I used my lookup, and I have to be honest, I cheated earlier. And I also looked at pictures of Ares from the end of Wonder Woman, and I remember completely wrong. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I used two lookups.
I'm glad that's fine. You can use mine. That's fine. I was literally going to put on Wonder Woman after we finished this.
Yeah, I know. It was starting to bother
Where's
me.
Where's the smoke, Frank?
When you're that confident, I know you're right. Like, there's times where I'm like, I think you're wrong. But then there's times where I'm like, no, he's definitely right.
Yeah.
I'm rarely
that. Going back to Luke and everything else, this is some of the best acting I've ever seen Mark Hamill do.
I think it's the best. Like, when he says, like, I won't make that mistake again, or whatever the exact line is,
I think
the best acting we've ever seen from him.
Yep. It's like they, because like, see, in Force Awakens, like the way he puts down his hood and everything like that was kind of like, I flourish.
It's over the top.
It's a little, like, over the top. And I don't think JJ
40s got, villain, like, mm-hmm, I throw it back and
right,
throw my head back and let my hair flow. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And I think, and like, sometimes even like Carrie Fisher's line delivery in that film isn't great. Mm. And I'm really hoping that like Rian Johnson really like gets something
pulls
out
some
of
great
them.
Performances, yeah,
like,
out of them. Yeah.
You're good actors. Let's do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, do not think that you can get away with.
There is, though, something to be said about how Star Wars acting has always been, you know, the faster, more intense thing from George Lucas, and it's always been sort of a pulp heroes slash movie serials version. You know, it's not straight acting. It's not necessarily, you know, Shakespearean, like you know, amazing, award-winning performances. Not in that they're not good, but that they are meant to be stylized.
Oh, definitely. But I think there's definitely a way of doing that without compromising your skill as an actor. Harrison Ford did it for three movies.
Sure.
Oscar Isaac did it in Force Awakens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was pulpy to a fault, but
that's true.
But he was.
But there's that air of realism.
There's an air of realism.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Nobody talks like that, but you believe they're talking like that.
That, yes.
So when it's not done well, I think it's even more jarring.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, see the see a lot of the performances in the prequels for that. I mean,
yeah, good. Yeah, exactly. You can pinpoint the, it's easier to say who did a better job acting in the prequels than who didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the list is pretty short.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Kylo Ren destroying his helmet? How do you feel about this?
So, I mean, he destroys everything, man. Like, he just throws stuff against the walls. He can make another one. Like, he probably has a closet full of them.
What we hear over that is, you know, get rid of the past to embrace the future or whatever. So I don't think I think the helmet's just gone. I don't think he's going to wear it, which, again,
I would like to think that.
I think it moves you. Well, he's not even wearing it in any of the promotional material. Mm-hmm. And the only picture you saw him without his helmet in Force Awakens was in Vanity Fair. Everything else he was in the helmet.
Okay.
So I think this is him moving further along the path of
moving away from
From Vader.
Away from Vader, closer to Ben Solo.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll buy that. That maybe is his version of
the Vader legacy, I should say.
The Vader legacy, yeah. But maybe that is more, that's his version of, you know, moving from white to gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's like wearing the whole full costume to not wearing the helmet.
Wearing the helmet is a big step. You know, and like I said, we've talked about, you know, that, you know, I can't do it, you know, destroying, you know, or killing mom or whatever. I think that's one of the beginning bits of the film.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that makes sense. I think that probably is early in the film, even though they've painted it to look like it's Act 3 or something.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right, that it probably is like Act 1 or 2.
I'm telling you, the Band-Aid.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he like went to medical and then immediately did this. Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
So then, but do you think that it's Act 3 by the time we get in the room with Snoke and Rey? And I was getting a little bit of a Return of the Jedi vibe from that with, like, you know, the person pulling the strings.
Destiny.
Yeah, being in the same room as, like, the Emperor figure being in the same room as the Luke figure.
Yeah,
you know,
because
feels
that's,
like,
yeah, cause that feels like you almost would wait for a... It's interesting because if you were to look at it from the original trilogy standpoint, it's almost like they ignored New Hope in that sense and gave you the Vader-Luke fight from Empire, Kylo Ren, Rey in Force Awakens.
Force Awakens, and now we're getting Jedi.
The like Emperor-Luke thing, but you're getting Snoke and Rey. So then what does Episode 9
What's left
bring?
For 9, right.
Right, so that's very exciting.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because now you're really giving us something, you're really giving us something new, which is exciting for Star Wars because, you know, Star Wars is all about circles and the cyclical nature of storytelling.
Ring theory,
exactly. But I love that, like, you know, like add a layer to that circle.
I love
that ring.
Idea. I love that idea.
It's great. I really think that, I think it's the third act. I think that's the third act.
The Snoke stuff.
I also think that the scenes with the red dust planet, the red salt planet, whatever, I think that's third act.
Okay.
You know, we see Chewie flying under
the
planet in the Falcon, you know, with the mines kind of looking like he's flying through, you know, like flying through the Death Star. It's got that kind of vibe. Kind of vibe to it. You see his new little companion. What do you think of the Porg?
I've heard a lot about Porgs. Apparently Porgs are a delicacy in the galaxy far, far away. So, you know, but maybe they like the chickens of those.
I don't know. It feels like you loved a cute thing from Force Awakens, so here's a cute thing. It almost feels like we need to make a cute thing for a toy.
Yeah, it's like the Ewoks of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except there's only one of them.
Well, I think there are.
Well, in the movie, only one of them.
But there is, like, some promo picture or something of Chewie with, like, apparently it looks like pieces of pork sticking out of his mouth, so...
Oh, maybe we'll just eat it at the end. That would be wicked funny, actually.
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Hey, it's Chewie. You know, we see BB-8 get shot. You know, we get some BB-8 getting shot.
I'm sure he's fine. Like, yeah, I'm sure he's fine. It's like R2 getting shot, you know? Like, electricity courses through him, and then he's fine, most likely. There's that, like... wolf-looking creature.
The ice-looking wolf.
Yeah.
Fox thing.
Foxy wolf.
Icy wolf, whatever it is. I like, you know, we can see Leia looking out and seeing the big hangar doors close, almost like she's waiting for somebody or they're getting trapped or something, like this is the end or who knows. But it definitely has a Hoth feel Hoth feel. To it.
Yep.
Yep. Instead of an ice planet, it's a red dust planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see Leia in the giant pool and the First Order seems to be getting larger and larger.
Yeah.
Snoke kind of hurting her. What do you think of the Snoke look now that he's officially kind of in the trailer with his gold robe and his slippers and all that?
Eliza, where are my slippers? He looks like he's kind of small.
You think it's still kind of, you think he's still like a little tiny little shrimp thing?
I mean, I don't think he's like Ewok sized or like Jawa sized, but I think he's just like not like average human sized.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of assumed he was. There was that big theory that he was going to be really small. Like
I
didn't like that. That would have made me laugh.
So.
And it's one thing to laugh at Yoda at the beginning because he's being funny. You don't want to laugh at your villain when he first appears.
No, you don't. It's okay to underestimate Yoda because then you're like, oh, wow, judge me by my size, do you? You know, like that. But this would be sort of like, if he's laughable, then he's not threatening. You know?
Exactly. And something small can be threatening, but it's still kind of laughable. It'd almost be like the little bunny from Holy Grail.
Yeah,
you're really threatening, but you're still got it.
Sharp pointed teeth.
Yeah. It's just a rabbit. So then, you know, then we get the thing everyone's freaking out about, you know, the hand holding thing, which we already talked about. But I really think that he's moving away from the dark side. And she's not necessarily moving towards it. But she's definitely getting rejected, which puts a foul taste in her mouth.
It does.
Which is the path to the dark side.
What if, though, a foul taste
in your mouth.
But what if, and this is a theory that I'm not making up, I'm not going to take credit for it, but people have said, and I think there's something to this, we've always talked about bringing balance to the Force, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if, think about it, like the light side winning isn't really bringing balance to the Force, it's just putting all the, like, if it's like a you know, like a scale like you used in science class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's putting all the weights on the one side of this, on the light side of the scale, and none of them on the left side of the scale.
Yep.
That's not balance.
No, it's
that's
not.
That's like the good side winning, sure, but it's not balance.
Yeah.
So what if, like, the answer that they're, the way forward the two of them mutually come to is it's somewhere in the middle. Like it's not good winning over evil, it's just sort of the two things
coexisting
and there being true balance, that scale being balanced where the two things are.
Kylo and Rey could literally be that balance where somebody who's has dark tendencies but leans towards the good and somebody who leans good but has dark tendencies or whatever. That's perfect. That's literal balance.
And that's why she's wearing gray and not black, maybe. You know, like, that not because she's not all the way there yet, but because maybe they're realizing the middle is the answer.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a theory that I've heard bandied about.
I've thought about that balance thing for years, way before Force Awakens came out. Because it never, even as a kid, it never made sense to me. Like, oh, we've got to balance the Force, so only goodness. Like,
right.
That
it's like,
doesn't
that's,
make sense.
That's just one side winning.
It's literally not balance.
That's just one side winning. That's not.
I don't think
and
that would mean
what
you think
good,
it means.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, it's the side of good. It's still, let's be objective, it is one side winning.
Right.
So that's not balance. It cannot be the definition of balance.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have anything else to add? I think that pretty much wraps up our trailer
talk. I mean, that's a good end of hour one. Let's get into hour two now. So let's talk about the Porg and Revenge of the Porg. So I think it's going to be episode 9's title. And we'll, why are you giving me that sign? Why
wonderful. You can find us at Beer with Geeks at thoughtbubbleaudio.com, where you can check out all our other Thought Bubble audio shows. You can also head over to Patreon and check out all of the Thought Bubble audio goodies there.
Mm-hmm.
You are more than welcome to rate and review us on iTunes, which would be very helpful to us. You can get in contact with us at Twitter, Gmail, and Facebook at Beer with Geeks and beerwithgeeks.com. I think I said all the things.
Yeah. Be sure to check out our other shows at thoughtbubbleaudio.com.
I said that already.
Hate Watch with us, Academy Rewind, Supergirl TV Talk, all the good stuff.
Krypton's Starkville's House of El Krypton.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff coming at you. All right, my friend.
Well, until next time.
Cheers.